This episode of Outlines was first released as a Patreon special. While I'm not back yet, I hope to return in one form or another soon. For now, thank you for your continued support. This episode of Outlines contains descriptions of a crime which some listeners may find distressing. So as always, discretion is advised. There is a website in a quiet corner of the internet with the address 76stationroad.hippies.co.uk. And if you choose to visit, you'll be greeted with this message. For those who frequented, or who actually lived in the house, just the name 76, or Station Road as it was known, will conjure up a myriad of phantasmagorical memories and a kaleidoscope of events and crazy situations, peppered with some of the most characterful personalities that in normal everyday life one is unlikely to ever meet. This is my introduction to the world of 76 Station Road, Broxbourne in Hertfordshire, a house which nowadays would set you back somewhere in the region of £500,000. But in the 1970s and 80s, was home to a small, informal commune filled with overloud sound systems, a jukebox in the kitchen, and a series of raggedy-looking people, painters, photographers, collectors, and eccentrics. The website tells us that these residents included Peter, a practicing historian in the field of valve electronics, photographers Pete, Paul and Dave, and Keith Church, who the website says was so tragically murdered in a midnight street knifing attack, which weighs heavily on all who knew him. I first read his name in a Freedom of Information document detailing unsolved murders in Hertfordshire. It said, Keith Church, 27 years old, location of offence, High Road, Hoddesdon, Harts. Victim was repeatedly stabbed whilst riding his pedal cycle. What it didn't say is that Keith was an artist, and that over his 6-year stay at Station Road between the years of 1976 and his death on the 9th of July 1982, he painted and drew several thousand pictures. His brother Robert said he produced so much art. It was his life, his passion. He was constantly writing and painting. When I decided to start these Patreon-only microcases, my first thought was of Keith's story and how I'd finally be able to tell it, because I've wanted to cover him ever since I was writing the Hertfordshire episodes back in 2018, but I couldn't find a way to do so then. The problem I had at the time is that this did not feel like a story about a murder. The murder is just a footnote in his short but creative life. Between the 19th of January and February the 26th of 2017, Goldsmiths University, a prestigious London art school, held a small exhibition of Keith's work. Entitled Urge to Paint, 1955 to 1982, it marked his 40-year graduation anniversary from Goldsmiths Art Foundation course. The exhibition, ordered by Keith's mother Pat and his cousin Kurt Barling, featured just a few of the over 2,000 paintings that Keith produced in the last 6 years of his life. In an article to mark the opening of the exhibition, Kurt Barling said, "For me, there has never been a day when I've not thought, what if? Every exhibition I've ever seen, whether it is at the Tate or the Guggenheim in Venice, I always have visions of my cousin's art. Every time I go to an art gallery and have the sense that Keith would have done something like that, I wonder, what if? You can't get away from that. It becomes a part of your being, part of your DNA, how you see the world through that prism of loss." I'm Jess Carter, and this is the Outlines podcast. Keith Albert Church was born in Hendon, Greater London, on the 28th of May 1955, to parents Albert and Pat Church. The eldest of three children, they were part of a large extended Anglo-Irish family. In 1960, Keith began his schooling in Wood Green, before switching to Rye Park Junior School in 1962 after the family moved to Hoddesdon in Hertfordshire. He passed his 11 plus and went on to study at Broxbourne Grammar, where he began to discover his love of art. What is described as his first serious painting comes from this time period. Even now, with this episode fully researched, I struggle to convince myself that the portrait of his mother, facing away from him in the kitchen, can possibly have been painted by a 12-year-old. I actually have a degree in fine art, and while I specialised in printmaking, not painting, I can see that there is something exciting in the way that 12-year-old Keith used the brush on canvas. While ostensibly impressionistic in style, his mark-making shows a real maturity and willingness to experiment. Despite his youth, you can see that he had a real talent. This opinion was shared by his art teacher Harmon Sumre, interestingly also a Goldsmiths graduate, who was a painter and art educator, and apparently was taught to tie a bow tie by poet Dylan Thomas. Sumre is described as having taken Keith under his wing and helped him to nurture his talent. In the Guardian's obituary for Harmon, it says that he was head of Broxbourne Grammar School's art department from 1961 to 1977 and inspired the wildest child, opening his pupils' eyes to art and, with his colleague John Higgins, building a nationally famous department at Broxbourne. It was out of this creatively privileged environment that Keith emerged. And in 1975, he was accepted at Goldsmiths to study on their Art Foundation course. Around this time, aged 19, he moved into the commune at 76 Station Road. I don't know what I was expecting from the area where Keith lived, but it's tree-lined and relatively affluent. I visited the area with Gemma in May of 2018, and I'm interested when I force her to dig out the old video files from that day to discover that my recollection of the place is markedly different to reality. All I remember is a built-up concrete area, relatively brutalist in style, and that at one point we drove past an old man pushing a wheelchair in which sat a large stone Buddha. As I look back, I see a mix of standard outer London sprawl, some of the brutalist buildings and mock Tudors, but with large leafy trees and open green spaces, like the one out the front of 76 Station Road. From Keith's window, he could see out over a green to the New River and St. Augustine's Church. This view would reportedly become the focus of his work for years to come. On the website keithchurch.co.uk, a quote from his mother Pat reads, "Keith had high morals. He cared about the world we live in. He cared about people, especially the underdog. He was not an angry person, but he did not fit in. He was just too shy." On the Station Road website, there are masses of photographs from that time, including plenty of Keith. My favourite shows him laying on top of a patterned blanket. The wall behind him is purple with white square-painted patches. He's wearing a V-neck jumper and dark trousers, and he leans on one side as he writes in a notebook, his dark shoulder-length hair tucked behind his ear. He's seemingly unaware of the camera pointed towards him, and there's something captivating. This, like so many of the pictures available of Keith, remind me of Patti Smith's account of the photographer Robert Mapplethorpe, who was the subject of her autobiography Just Kids. I get a similar feeling when I look at the photographs of Keith as I did when I read the book. And I like to fancy that I can smell the damp and dust of the house as it mingles with incense, cigarettes, and whatever else they might have been smoking. In 1976, Keith completed his foundation course and began to retreat into what he described as splendid isolation, in order to work on his art and discover what kind of artist he wished to be. Despite being extremely hard up, Keith worked with whatever materials he had to hand, and his work from this period demonstrates the artistic journey he was in the process of taking. Some of the paintings are remarkably different and show his broad range of influences, both artistic and literary. In 1981, he had reignited a relationship with his childhood sweetheart Patricia Clare, who had three children from a previous marriage which hadn't long broken up. She and Keith would go out painting together, and she told the newspapers that Keith loved butterflies and local landscapes. It was a difficult time for me, and I was very lucky to have such a kind, considerate person living nearby. When he first graduated from the foundation, Keith was concerned that if he were to study for a degree, the structure and institutional pressure would curb his artistic development. But by 1982, the year he died, he was finally ready to return to Goldsmiths and resume his education. On the 8th of July 1982, Keith had spent the evening visiting his girlfriend Patricia at her mother's home in North Hoddesdon, which was a couple of miles away from the squat in Broxburn. It was sometime after 11:45 when he left to cycle home. He was wearing a light brown waist-length leather jacket, black shirt, blue jeans and black boots, and his bike was an orangey-red colour with straight handlebars and white mudguards. The road he had to cycle down was the Hoddesdon High Road, which ran as far as Station Road. That night had been busy out. Despite the fact that it was a Thursday, the 1982 World Cup was in full swing, and Italy had just beaten Poland 2-0 that evening, apparently sending scores of local Italians out onto the street in celebration. Later, Superintendent Emerson, who led the investigation, would say, "We know that there is a large Italian community in the town, and that there was a certain amount of celebration that night by Italians going around in their cars." By the time Keith began to cycle home, though, the streets were quieter, and as he passed by Hoddesdon Police Station, he was stopped. It is thought that around 12:15 to 12:20 a.m. on the morning of Friday the 9th of July, one or two men driving a red car attempted to rob Keith, and it was when he resisted that his assailant began to stab him repeatedly, with what was reported at the time to be a blade at least 1 inch wide and 3 inches long. When researching this case, I find what happened next to be the most troubling part, and I can't quite get the image to leave my head. As I picture the scene, I think about this quote from Keith's mother, Pat. "Keith was a man who did care about the world. He cared about people. He saw the very bad in the world, and he saw the good." Despite the fact that he was badly injured and bleeding heavily, Keith managed to cycle on for a further half a mile before collapsing on the doorstep of a house on the corner of St. Catherine's Road, about half a mile again away from his home. He managed to raise the alarm and was taken to Princess Alexandra Hospital in Harlow, where he died at 1:30 a.m., just over an hour after the attack. Before he died, he was able to find the strength to tell police that the man responsible was driving a red saloon car, similar to a Ford Escort or Cortina. In the days following Keith's death, 60 police officers were tasked with tracking down his murderer. Their first port of call was attempt to trace the red car, and they began to canvass the area. There's a little bit of confusion in the news reports from the time as to whether one or two suspicious red cars were spotted. A Ford Capri is mentioned, then later an Austin Allegro, although as both of these vehicles apparently had a black vinyl roof, it's likely but not confirmed to have been the same car. This car, which was most commonly described as a Capri, was seen driving in the Wormley, Broxburn and Hoddesdon areas. The Capri's two male occupants were described by Superintendent Keith Emerson as looking to cause annoyance. The first reported instance of this was at 10:30 p.m. when the men, both of whom reportedly possessed Scottish accents, were heard shouting abuse at a woman standing in a bus queue in Enfield, which is about 8 miles away from where Keith was attacked. The woman, who was not identified by the police, boarded a 310 bus and travelled to Half Hyde Lane in Cheshunt. She was described as having curly fair hair and wore a white see-through blouse and tight black trousers. After this, the Scottish men were seen again at 11 p.m. outside the Queen's Head pub in Wormley, where they shouted abuse at a 16-year-old cyclist. Then they were seen twice more, once outside a Chinese takeaway in Stansted Road in Hoddesdon, which was somewhere between 11:30 and 12:20 that night, and also at an unknown time when they shouted abuse at a woman who was again walking down Rye Road in Hoddesdon. If you plot these on a map, the earliest sightings are to the south of the area where Keith was attacked, and the later ones are to the north. A description of one of the Scottish men, which was given to police by a witness who saw the vehicle 3 times in the same hour, was circulated by DSI Emerson, who said that he was obese with a fat face and thick neck, aged about 25. He was 5'8" tall with fine, light-coloured hair, wearing a light-coloured T-shirt with capped sleeves. There's a really alarming artist's impression of the Scottish man, which Superintendent Emerson described as being a good likeness. I'll put the drawing up on my Instagram because I'm not really sure how to explain the way it looks, except to say that if I saw that drawing and I knew the man, it's difficult to see how I could not make the connection. He looks like no one I've ever seen. There is no public description of the second occupant of the red car, but we do have another sighting made by someone who witnessed the tail end of the attack and saw a man chasing after Keith as he cycled away from the scene. The man was aged 30 to 35 and 5'10" tall. He had short black hair cut in the style of an outgrown crew cut and a few days' worth of beard growth. He had an olive complexion and looked to possibly have been Italian or Mediterranean in heritage. He wore blue jeans and a light-coloured short-sleeved shirt. Of this man, whose photo fit I will also include on Instagram, Superintendent Emerson said, "I am sure this man is closely connected with the death of Mr. Church. I have no doubt about that at all." The police were also working within the theory that whoever the attacker was, he must have been either local or from one of the surrounding areas, Enfield, Edmonton or Harlow in particular. Apart from the Scottish men and the man seen running after Keith, there is very little extra information about the investigation itself. One small area of confusion about Keith's attack is why he chose to cycle away from Hoddesdon Police Station when he was so close to it, instead of turning round and hurrying inside. There are 2 schools of thought on this. One was posited at the time by Detective Inspector John Newton, who said, "The attack took place just outside the police station, and from the one witness who was in the area and saw the incident just as it finished, we understand Mr. Church was just past the station. His assailant was still there, so it was understandable that he would not want to turn back." The second school of thought comes courtesy of Keith's cousin Kurt Barling, who in his book The R-Word says, "Like many young people, he was distrustful of the police, and it is quite possible that he decided not to seek refuge in the police station because of this, though we shall never know." One thing that bothers me about the man chasing Keith down the road and away from the police station is, what had happened to the red car by then? Keith said himself that the attacker was in the red car, and yet, by the time the witness sees the tail end of the stabbing, the car is no longer in the narrative. There's only a sole man chasing Keith's bicycle on foot. Did the driver panic and leave the scene of the attack without the attacker, Or was the perpetrator not one of the two Scottish men after all? Also, if the men were local, then how on earth wasn't the large Scottish man from the police sketch identified? He's not blending into a crowd if that's how he truly looked. Back in 1982, when Keith's girlfriend Patricia was interviewed, she said, "Keith was the kindest, gentlest person I have known. He would never have hurt a fly, and he was certainly not the sort of person to have provoked a fight. He would not want me to hate the person who killed him. I hope he decides to come forward, rather than live with his conscience." Despite the fact that next year will be the 40th anniversary of Keith's death and his murderer still has not come forward, thanks to the work of his cousin Kurt and mother Pat, who for so long was the sole custodian of his paintings and drawings, Keith's legacy will continue to live on through his art. If you're interested, then I'd encourage you to seek out his work, but when you do so, bear in mind the beautifully succinct words of Pat Church. "If they like what they see, I'm happy for them to see it." As Kurt Barling said of the Goldsmiths exhibition, "Keith's is a familiar story of how an artist struggles to fashion a personal vision in a demanding world. His vision was ultimately incomplete, and this exhibition is a reminder of the artistic aspiration of finding a unique way of representing the world." What you're going to find is the work of a man who had just started to find his place in a discipline that takes most people a much longer lifetime than his to perfect. I want to leave you with a quote of Keith's. He wrote it in a notebook back in 1976, around the time he moved into the commune on 76 Station Road. It says, "Art is the result of an urge, controlled and applied by the will of the artist, though the urge often comes out much stronger than the control." This episode of Outlines was researched, written, performed, and produced by Jess Carter. The music was composed by Elias Hardy.